Nation, 100.3 WRMB.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Urban One Incorporated, Radio One, or any of its subsidiary companies.
This program has been paid for by my Philly lawyer.
Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning. Welcome back. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host of Court Radio, right here on WRNB 100.3.
And Classics 107.9.
We got a little flippy floppy there. Well, anyway, we're on the radio.
Rookies.
But we're also...
It's called live.
Right here on YouTube Live.
That's right.
There you go. If you're catching us on YouTube and you've got questions, we don't want to leave you out. This is not just for our radio audience any longer. So please post your questions, pop them out one by one. We will do our very best to get to every question asked. If it's already beyond the show, you could still post your questions. I'll circle back every week to answer questions.
That's why nothing is beyond you.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Ever.
Nothing.
I feel guilty.
Why?
What'd
you do?
I witnessed an accident yesterday.
Uh-huh.
But by the time I processed it, I was already like a half a mile past it.
Where was this?
This was on the Blue Route, where the Blue Route and 76, the Schuylkill, kind of meet there.
Oh, yeah. I think I heard that on the air on the traffic report of that accident.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a huge accident, but let me diagram it for you.
Paint the picture.
So it's three lanes in that part of the Blue Route, and there was a car in the far right lane and a car in the center lane.
Far right, center.
Yeah. Gotcha. And the car in the far right lane was behind the car in the center lane. Okay?
Gotcha.
And I'm watching this car in the right lane, and it just slides across, crosses the lane marker, and makes contact with the rear passenger side of the car in the center lane.
Cars or SUVs?
I think they were cars.
Gotcha.
And I was like, I can't believe that just happened. And he hit him, and then they slide back over into the right lane and get off in the shoulder. But by the time – and I'm going – we're going like 65 miles an hour. Mm. I'm beyond them. And I thought about it. The most likely way for that accident to happen, when a client comes in to me with that fact scenario, which is a fairly common one, I typically believe that the car in the center lane is moving – lanes going into the right lane, and that this car is in its blind spot. That's how that happens. Mm. That's always, almost always how that happens, because this car moves to this, to the right lane.
One in the center lane.
Yeah, the center lane car moves to the right lane, and the car in the right lane is in its blind spot. We have blind spots in it, right?
Yep.
And so, because in order for this car
In the right lane,
mm-hmm. to move into the center lane, when the car's right there in front of it,
mm-hmm.
it has to be a complete idiot, or I don't know what the explanation is, because they're able to see the vehicle they're about to drive into.
DUI?
Nah. Well, it's
drifting from one.
It's all phone. Mm. It has to be phone.
And guess what?
Yeah. You're looking down. You're not looking. And you're looking at the phone, yep. and you slide over.
That makes sense.
Interesting question. Can you be a witness and their lawyer at the same time?
I get a witness?
Can you?
I get a witness?
Amen.
Amen.
Brother.
Amen, brother.
Can you
no.
be a witness?
No, you can't.
Hell no.
Aha!
Well, hell no.
So you could be the attorney for that.
But yes.
Hold on. If someone's in the car with you, can they be a witness?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they might be subject to some cross-examination, like, hey, you're hanging out with Dean, and Dean's representing
right.
them. And
so there's going to be some bias.
So there's going to be some skepticism right. on their...
Oh, I like that word for Saturday.
Skepticism.
Yeah. Skepticism.
Yeah. But, you know, I will be less skeptical of the fact scenario when the person in the center lane says, I didn't leave my lane. They just drove into the side of my car.
Well, the damage tells the story.
True.
It would have happened either. This car has front driver's side damage. The
other car.
Center car in the center lane has rear passenger side. It happens this way. Or it happens this way.
Well, Dean, did it result
the same
in
same damage?
Was there an accident? Was there a fishtail or anything? Or was it just the tab? What happened? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But I can tell you this. I had the same case last week.
Similar case.
Right. And I was skeptical. But you know what?
What?
The person in the right lane, the center lane,
right.
Person in the center lane had dash cam video.
There you go.
And when those two cars pulled off, completely different accident, but very similar facts. When they pulled off, the first thing the person in the right-hand lane said was, they moved into my lane. They lied on them, and the cops said, okay. And then the center lane person said, I got dash cam. Police officer looked at the dash cam, walked back to the other car, and said, you're busted.
Dun, dun, dun.
Isn't that part of the motivation for the Harrisburg passing that new law, which automatically fines you $50 simply for having either a handheld or some electronic gizmo in your hand? No questions asked. If it's in your hand, even if you're not looking at it, there's a $50 fine.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, with all due respect, sir, I haven't announced you yet. But... ladies and gentlemen, the cat is out of the hat.
You haven't been recognized.
The bag is out of the cat. And that person who just spoke some words is Saul L. Langsome.
Good morning, everybody.
Better call Saul.
Good morning.
The pride and joy of my Philly lawyer,
is
Saul.
The pride and joy.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Saul L. Langsome.
Just not quite the baby boy.
No.
No.
At one point he might have been. But
Joe DiMaggio of my Philly lawyer.
Yeah. It was a rude awakening when the Philadelphia Bar Association invited me to a 50-year induction in November of last year. I said, that's nice. Not possible.
Yeah.
I said, that's not possible.
Where does the time go? Sir?
Right. Ben Franklin asked the same question. Ben was there, right?
Yeah. Mm. And how lucky can you be that you wake up in the morning all these years with a smile on your face and say, hey, I'm looking forward to the next day.
Amen.
Yeah, there it is.
There you go.
Amen.
There
it is.
There you go.
So if Saul's in the house, folks, most likely we're talking about wills, estates, trusts. So if you have any questions at all, give us a call, 215-227-2727. We're happy to tackle any legal issue. But if you've got a legal issue regarding wills, estates, and trusts, Saul's the man to ask the question to, not me. And so... I have some questions for Saul about wills and estates to get the ball rolling, so to speak. What are the most important estate planning documents? I mean, if you had to pick number one, number two, maybe number three, what would they be?
Well, that's a really good question.
I do ask good questions.
And the answer, let's go back to the start of COVID. With the onset of COVID, the public started to think a little bit differently about their own assets, their own estates, and
their own mortality.
And what has happened as a direct result of COVID is that the concept of being able to control your estate or your assets when maybe you're no longer capable of doing that is front and center. I mean, we see it in the volume of work that we get right now. So what are we talking about? The most common and the most necessary of all the documents would be a will, whether it's a simple will or a complex will. The reason for that is...
Wait. So I want to diverge just a moment, because I want you to explain in layman terms what do you mean when you say the difference between a simple will and a complex will? What is that
the
distinction?
Yeah, the distinction is the result of how complicated the assets are that have been accumulated by the author of that document. So let's say your typical situation is a home in Philadelphia and a checking or savings account. It's a simple estate. The thinking behind the will document is that the owner of that home or the owner of the cash assets in the bank controls the distribution of that property through a will document. Now, why is that important? Because if he doesn't put his thoughts in writing, in Pennsylvania we have the intestate statute, and the intestate statute is going to tell the estate who gets what. And sadly, you're not going to be here to complain because you're resting comfortably 6 feet down. So the will document, you think about it, it's or this discussion is all about control. You leave the will, you control through your words who gets what. In the same breath, the demand for POAs, powers of attorney, most popular are elderly parents whose adult children will bring them to our office, because that gives the parent a voice through a child when, God forbid, something happens to the parent, that their mind goes to the dark side and they can no longer speak for themselves. But the adult child that they identify as an agent in the power of attorney becomes the voice of the parent. And at the same time, that adult child understands what the wishes of the parent are. So you once again have control through a power of attorney.
Does a power of attorney, will that substitute for a will?
No, no.
Why?
So the misnomer, the power of attorney does not distribute property. The power of attorney simply allows an elderly parent to designate a child to two things: to assist the parent in decision making, or allow that child to speak for the parent when the parent's no longer capable. The document, the POA document, is not a will in that it's not a testamentary document. It doesn't distribute property because the distinction is this, and it's a good question because we're asked that all the time. The power of attorney gives the individual a voice immediately when that power of attorney is signed. The power of attorney becomes stone silent when the giver of that power of attorney closes their eyes.
You mean dies?
That's exactly what I mean, dies. And once they die, if they have prepared a will, then the will becomes the voice of that individual. So you have a POA that becomes silent, and you have a will through an executor or an executrix that now will speak for that individual.
Well,
so they have a voice.
What happens, let's say I'm, you know, a relatively, well, what it doesn't matter, age doesn't matter. What if I don't have children, right, and I'm not married, and I didn't come to see you, and I got a house, and I got a few dollars in the bank?
Well,
what happens to my property then?
Well, I mean, the misnomer is that it cheats to the state. That's not true. If you take a look at the Pennsylvania statute, there is a pecking order of potential family members that can inherit. So if you pass away and you do not have a will, under our statute, if you have a surviving spouse, they're first in line. If you have natural children or adopted children, they're next in line. If you have
What about stepchildren?
Only if they're adopted, not stepchildren.
Ah.
A little nuance matters.
If you have a mother or a father that's alive, they're next in line. If you have siblings alive, they're next in line. And the lowest level to inherit would be the children of siblings or nieces and nephews. If you have none of those relationships, then Uncle Sam might be receiving the property 6 or 7 years later through an escheat process. But if you have any of those relationships, they can present a claim and they will be recognized, provided they can provide the documentation to connect all the lines to show that, in fact, you are properly related to the decedent, and then you'll be entitled.
Can said decedent, if no children, not married, none of the above, determine in their will, you know what, in that case, I want it left to some charitable organization else?
I have right now, I did a will for an elderly lady about 2 years ago who had no family. Mm-hmm. And the will consists of 22 charities.
All right. Wow. But they have to designate that themselves.
They have to. Yes. Yeah. And interestingly enough, this lady, God bless her, calls me every other week to tell me that she wants to change the amount of a gift to a particular charity. She called me the other day and said, Saul, I left $1,500 in my will for the Salvation Army. I want to increase it to $2,000. Fine.
When people leave stuff to the pets, is that real?
Well, it is. The case that is always brought up when you talk about pets, mm-hmm, is the Hemsley case.
Leona.
Mm-hmm. So when her husband died, and he was an extremely wealthy person owning all these hotels, he left everything to his wife. And for whatever reason, I'm not sure if they had children or not, but when she died, she left everything to her cat. And when that was litigated in court, the court decided that she was a pet lover and that she would have no objection if the wealth in her estate would be distributed among the country's SPCAs and animal welfare groups and things like that. And that's what they ultimately ended up doing.
Okay. Yeah. That was one hell of a put-together cat, man.
Man, look. Mm-hmm. Nine lives every night.
215-227-2727. The number for all things legal. If you need an attorney for whatever reason, you just call that number. 215-227-2727. If we don't handle what you need, I will make sure you're in the hands of somebody competent and top-notch anywhere in the country.
Anywhere.
215-227-2727, the number for all things legal.
Chris says he fits that description.
So if, just going back to your first question regarding what documents should be in place.
Yes, sir.
We talk about a will.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about powers of attorney. And the other document, which is very much in demand, are health care directives. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about health care directives, I find, is that
They're commonly called a living will?
The misnomer is they're referred to as a living will. It's a health care directive. And the demand for this, the largest demand for this document is coming from the millennials and the Gen Xers. So they are executing these documents, which basically instructs their medical providers as to what they can and the doctors can and cannot do for them in the event of catastrophic illness. I find that very interesting.
So we have three documents. We have got the will, the power of attorney, and a health care directive.
Correct. And there's also trusts, which get a lot of notoriety in social media, but social media sadly creates an awful lot of confusion because
what is a trust?
They do not properly educate the public as to the trust vehicle, what it means, and what it means for you if, in fact, you put your assets into a trust. But a trust is a legal document that is created with settlors and trustees as the person who's funding the trust and the people who are going to make the decisions on the trust, as well as the beneficiaries are going to be the recipients of that trust. And the trust is a document that in its own right owns the property that you put into the trust. So if you choose to put your home into the trust, it's important to understand that you no longer own the home, because you're going to go to an attorney like me who's going to prepare a new deed, and the deed is going to be a transfer by you, the owner of the property, into the name of the trust, which means you don't own the property anymore.
Can I still live there?
You can live there because the trust is going to identify all of your rights and privileges. What the public doesn't recognize is that, starting from the basics, a simple trust, you're not going to get away with spending any less than $3,500, $4,000 for a basic trust, because it's very complicated and it could run easily 20 pages. And the question always asks is, why is a trust so much money and why is a will $400, $500? I said, because they're two totally different documents. I said, and if you can benefit from the trust, your assets being owned by the trust, and you're ahead of the curve. The motivation for the trust, the motivation is that those whose net worth exceeds $12 million, that's according to the IRS, those people are then exposed to federal estate taxes. They don't particularly care about Pennsylvania inheritance taxes, because that's only 4% for children. But the federal estate taxes can take as much as a 50% bite out of your assets if you haven't protected them. Most of those people don't own anything in their name because they're concerned about the federal estate taxes. So they don't own money. They don't own cars. They don't own real estate. They got trusts all over the place.
I want to be wealthy enough not to own anything.
Well, you have that option when you think the time comes, but people wealthy don't realize that.
Yeah. Isn't that poor? Not to own anything.
No, it's either poor or really, really wealthy.
Is it?
Well, he just said it.
Yeah, like, I know, but the way you just said it, if you just heard that, wait, what?
I want to be wealthy enough not to own anything.
That's cool. So, yeah.
That's real wealth.
And here's a common here's one of the most common misunderstandings in the public. So I want to put my house in the trust. You understand that if you put it in the trust, you're not the owner of the property. Yes. Mm. Oh, by the way, do you have a mortgage? Yeah, I have a mortgage. I said, do you understand that in the mortgage document, the one that has put a lien on your property in favor of the mortgage company, it clearly states that you cannot transfer any equity in this property to anybody else without the written consent of the mortgage company? And what that simply means is if you violate the terms of the mortgage, you're in breach. And mortgage company is not a fan of this asset being owned by a trust when, in fact, you have a personal note against you when you take out that. So it's clear. And if you do put that house into a trust, you have to get an EIN number for that trust, because that trust becomes a taxpayer. And that trust is going to file a tax return every year.
So the trust has assets and potentially income.
Mm-hmm.
And just like any of us, it's a living legal entity that may owe taxes at the end of a year.
That is correct.
Now, if you own your property outright and you are maybe concerned that one of your creditors one day might swoop in and take the property.
That part.
Then maybe you might want to consider a trust. Maybe if you're the kind of guy who's always hanging out at casinos and potentially getting yourself into debt over these gambling things, you might protect your asset and your family by moving it into a trust. But these are very specific scenarios. And as you said, you can't have a mortgage on the property, right? So it's got to be a property that you own free and clear, before you can move it into a trust unless you get the permission of the mortgage holder. 215-227-2727. We got callers. Let's take line one, Orlando. Good morning, Orlando, and welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, good morning. Once again, it's Orlando Simmons. My question is, my wife and I have been taking helping my father-in-law out. He's older. He's almost 90 years old. She doesn't want to have the burden of becoming a landlord to her younger brother who is over 50 but barely pays any bills. What does she have to do to make sure that property, she can get rid of the property at her beckon?
Is the property owned by her father?
Yes, he owns it. And okay. Her mother passed away a couple years ago.
Well, so there's two choices.
Will a power of attorney, if they get a power of attorney from dad, will that enable her or allow her to sell that property or transfer it?
It will, but I guess the other direction to go is that the father can add the name of the daughter to the deed as a joint tenant with survivorship, so that if something happens to the father, she'll become the owner of the property, or he can leave a will, and in the will he designates that that home goes to the daughter, and she then becomes the owner of the property.
So transfer the title into her name now, along with dad. Prepare a will that she's the beneficiary of. Lastly, prepare a power of attorney, and then if she decides at some point that it's in his best interest for that property to be transferred out of his name and into somebody else's name or sold or what have you, then she would have the capacity to do that so long as he was alive and had prepared a power of attorney naming her as his agent.
That's true, but I don't want to complicate things, but there are tax ramifications with each of the options that you've identified.
We're going to come back on the other side of the break, and you're going to talk about the tax ramifications. Orlando, it sounds like you need a consultation with Saul. Give the office a call Monday, 215-227-2727, and he will help you.
Once again, have Saul check his message. I left my message about a week and a half ago, but I'll call back again.
Thank you, Orlando. Have a great day.
You as well. Bye-bye. Okay.
Hey, listen, sometimes something falls through the crack, but I'm happy that Orlando called us on Saturday to bring that up, and Saul will get back to him, maybe even today. We have to get on with a break. We've got sponsors, and they must have their way with you. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
We're on YouTube.
It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes, and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact? With over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Urban One Incorporated, Radio One, or any of its subsidiary companies.
More legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Yes, sirree, Bob, we're back, and I am still Dean Weitzman, your host, right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
And YouTube Live.
Right here.
I love my YouTube audience as well as my radio audience, and I hope you guys get along and cross-pollinate. What do I mean? If you're a radio listener, you should circle yourself over to the YouTube channel and become a follower, a subscriber of the YouTube feed. Like and subscribe and share the YouTube feed with your friends and family and blow us up. If you don't like it, If you don't like me, you can blow me up. There you go. And Carly says that that's you know, something she would like to see happen too. Okay. What did you miss?
No, we didn't miss. So
getting blown up.
Okay.
All right.
On YouTube.
So we just want to just finish our last topic with tax ramifications because.
Yes.
These are important, and you really have to understand them. When you add the name of somebody to your deed, that individual, should they ever become the owner of the property, is going to be subject to greater capital gains taxes because as an owner of that property, they're going to be treated as if they were – they acquired that property on the very first day. So if a parent bought a property 20 years earlier and they paid $100,000 for that property, and then they go and add the name of a child to that deed, and the parents pass away and the child decides to sell that property.
For a million.
For a million, that child will be subject to capital gains based on the original purchase price.
So $900,000 in gain.
That's correct.
At no, no.
At 20%. Yeah.
At 20% capital gains tax. What is the, you know, something's floating around in my mind.
What?
Something about stepped taxes? Up basis.
That's what it is. So I'm getting this. So what happens is if you do not add the name of the child to the deed, but the child inherits that property through the will.
Yes.
They get a stepped-up basis, which wipes out all of the capital gains taxes. What happens is the child inherits the property based on its current market value, not the purchase price when the
parents acquired it. So they pay a 4% estate tax, 4.5% estate tax, not a 20% capital gains
tax. That's correct. And again, it's a little complicated, but in some instances, it represents a lot of money.
All right. Let's get a caller on line. Line one, John. Good morning, John, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Michael, you may have just answered part of my question. My wife and I got married in 2005. We purchased our home in 2007. My name and only my name was on the home at that time because my credit was much better than my wife's. So in the event when I close my eyes, when I pass away and my wife is still here, what I was going to do was just what you guys were saying, was add my wife's name to the deed. But it sounds like it may be better, as you're saying, just to myself to have a will.
Right, right.
right? Yeah, and she doesn't have to pay as much. She still has to pay taxes.
No.
But not as much.
No, she doesn't have to pay any taxes because...
Inheritance taxes.
No, because we were talking about inheritance for a child, and that's 4.5%. Oh. But a surviving spouse has no inheritance tax in Pennsylvania. So there's no state tax. And then there's not enough for it to be federal, and there's no and she takes it on a stepped up basis, so she gets it whatever the value is at the time that you passed. So there's absolutely no tax for her if you will it to her.
But I have to put her name in my will. It's not just when I pass away, she's my wife, and she automatically gets the home.
No. Nothing's automatic if you have children and you don't leave a will.
Right.
So you really have to put your thoughts in writing.
Yeah. I thought it was automatic, you know, the spouse.
Not necessarily. If you've got children from a different spouse, now you've got the children from a different spouse and then your current spouse, and it gets complicated. No.
If you have children from a different spouse, then your current spouse's interest is limited to 50% of the value of the house.
Well, the first $30,000.
No, that's if you have children combined.
Oh.
So if your surviving spouse is also the mother of your children, he or she is entitled to the first $30,000 of value plus one half of the difference.
So it doesn't. Here's the bottom line: no will. She's not getting it all, and if you have kids anywhere. And so her interest is going to be only about a half. So if you don't want that to happen, you better run, not walk, to get a will, because you never know what's going to happen,
but
John.
But even with a will, does she have to apply for the mortgage as the surviving spouse?
Well,
no. If it's in place, you do notify the mortgage company. But if most people are set up with automatic mortgage payments, and if the automatic mortgage payments continue, you're not going to be bothered by the mortgage company.
Oh, okay. So is that a wills.com thing, or do I go to a – where do you go – where's a good place to go to create a will?
Well, what a great question.
That is a great question, and I will tell you, you see these ads on paper, on the news, you see them on God only knows whatever social media source. Mm-hmm. We have a form for you. Just buy this form for $200, fill in the blanks, and you have a will. Well, you know, it's not like a pair of socks where one size fits all. Pennsylvania has its own rules and regulations. Sure Texas is. Has their own. Florida has their own. And somebody brought one of these fill-in-the-blank wills to me. As a rule, I won't even look at them. Mm. But I did in this instance, and the mother did one of these documents. And Pennsylvania law is very clear. You need witnesses to sign in two places, and their signatures have to be notarized. And her document did not have the witness signatures. But because she was an only child under our statute, that client was going to inherit 100% of her mother's estate anyway.
Yeah, but without having the proper witnesses and the notaries, you know, it makes it a lot more difficult. And you know, if that will is going to get probated and you can't get the witnesses to come in, it, again, adds layers of complexity at the time that you really don't want complexity. You're suffering from the loss of a loved one. And the answer is, you know, John, and I'm not saying this because I'm a lawyer and I'm going to make a fee on you. You want to be able to sit down with somebody and have a consultation. You want to be able to run ideas by them and have them comment on whether it's a good idea, a bad idea, or whether you should try something a little differently. You don't get that from a website. And even if, you know, you end up paying another couple hundred dollars because you're actually meeting with a lawyer in his office, I think it's money well spent. So, yeah, I think the answer is if you have a relationship with an attorney, go see him. But if you don't, give us a call at 215-227-2727. Saul will meet with you. He'll prepare the documents. You'll get to see the office, and you'll leave with the documents in your hand, properly notarized in the right places in the right amount of times, and you'll know that you can count on those documents when the time comes.
You guys have been awesome. Thank you so much. A roundabout what would that cost be?
Probably somewhere in the $300 to $500 range.
I mean, yeah, okay. I mean, we charge a couple hundred dollars for consultations, and like I said, simple wills are not expensive. You know, $350, $400 if it falls Perfect. Into that category.
All right, John. Take care. Have a great Saturday, sir.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
More than one person has said, Saul, you're a gentleman and a scholar. You explain things so simple.
Why, thank you. Thank you. I try. It's a very important area of the law, and people really need to know what the consequences might be of the decisions that they make, and they obviously want to make the best decisions for their families.
Especially if it's going to get challenged, the weaker the will.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the other misnomer out there is, this is my parent, and I have a right to part of my parents' estate or assets. That's totally false. Children do not have a claim in Pennsylvania to the assets of their parents.
Well, speaking of which, okay, because some kids are out there. You know what I mean? You know what I mean. They're out there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah. They're doing things that you might not approve of. You're not clearly crazy about the way they're going about their life. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to just turn over maybe a couple hundred G's to this kid who don't know how to use it properly.
It'll be gone.
But we're talking, like, when we were talking about trust and you said it's complicated, it's a 20-page document, can't we put some trust language into what was a rather simple will?
You can do that, but that trust goes into effect when the person passes away.
So we're talking a different trust.
We're talking about a testamentary trust.
So a testamentary trust allows me, the decedent, to reach out from the grave and put a throttle on how much or when my beneficiaries get paid.
That's correct. You're in complete control because in that will document that you create, when you put the trust language in there, you can designate the trustee who's going to handle the finances for the trust, and you can identify what the money can be used for, and you can identify what age intervals you would like the principal of the trust to be distributed.
Give us an example.
The most common example involves young families. So you're married. Maybe you have a one-year-old. Maybe you have a child on its way. They'll come in, and typically with young families, we'll do a will. We'll always do a will for the husband. We'll always do a will for the wife. Typically, those wills will have reciprocal provisions, which simply says if something happens to the wife, everything goes to the husband. If something happens to the husband, everything goes to the wife. God forbid you lose both parents and you have young children. You then identify the children as beneficiaries. You put the money into the trust for those children. Most importantly, you identify the trustees who handle the financial affairs of the children, as well as naming guardians who have the responsibility for raising those children. And the language in the testamentary trust will designate age intervals. I can tell you what is most common among younger families is four distributions at the ages of 18, 21, 25, and 30. There is significance behind each one of those age intervals. Because at the age of 18, if your child is capable of or wants to go to college, it'll assist with tuition. At the age of 21, they may or may not consider graduate school. At the age of 25, they may be getting involved in some type of a relationship. And the balance of the money is distributed at the age of 30. Now, those four age distributions are not written in stone because I have clients that say, no, I like three distributions. I want it to continue beyond the age of 30. I want two distributions. I've even had clients say they can distribute 100% at the age of 18. And, of course, if they ask my opinion, I'll give it to them. If they don't ask my opinion, I won't. But I don't think an 18-year-old is sufficiently mature or worldly enough to handle finances like that.
Yeah, I mean, especially when we're talking about significant amount of money. 215-227-2727. You got questions? I got the answers.
I got a pecking order question again about children. Natural children, adopted children, stepchildren. Is there a pecking order?
There's no pecking order. Stepchildren are not entitled. They're not the natural child.
Unless
they're in the will.
Unless they're in the will. That is correct. So the will language controls. But adopted children and natural children are treated exactly the same.
Same thing. Okay.
Yeah. So in my instance, I have Soph, Sarah, and Jared and Jackson.
Right.
Jackson's my stepson.
Right.
And so if I don't have a will and I don't name him in that will, and it got to the point where the property was going to be passed through intestacy, the three natural biological children would get everything. So it's really important because I treat Jackson as my son. I treat him no different than any of the other children.
Right.
It's important for me to have a will, which reminds me that it's been a while since I've done a will, and we should take a look at that and perhaps
tweak it.
Yes.
That's an update.
It's time for a tweak. And so on next week, I'm gonna ask you to, tweak my will.
And Saul, charge him double.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Jay on line two. Jay?
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello, Jay.
Good morning.
Good morning, dear. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
What's your question?
So my question is,
mm-hmm.
my husband and I have our my primary residence in Philadelphia, and then we built a vacation rental property in Myrtle Beach, and that generates income. And we also have two natural children between the two of us, his last two, but there are seven children that he has from previous relationships. They're all adults now. And so he and I have been talking about a trust. We're trying to understand how they work because I watched my neighbors' children squabble when they all inherited.
Yeah.
And created a lot of problems with all those people inheriting. So I wanted to have some way where they all benefit from the income that this investment property in Myrtle Beach generates, but that they don't collectively own it, because I'm just seeing that not work well. And so I wanted to find out how that trust should be created, and do we create the trust in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, or do we create the trust in South Carolina? That property has a higher value.
Yeah, there's so many layers to what you're asking right now, and not the least of which is what you're proposing is sort of creating, let's call it a corporation. And this corporation has seven or nine, I don't know how many kids we're talking about, but a lot of shareholders. And they've got to get along and they've got to accomplish a goal. Running this vacation property, getting the income, keeping it up, all of that stuff that they need to kind of work together to do. I'm not sure that they're going to want to do that together. I'm not sure that that's not creating more problems than it's solving. And I wonder if it isn't better to simply sell the property when the last of you and your husband pass and divide the assets in the manner in which you think is appropriate between these kids. I don't know if you are going to accomplish what you want, i.e. an income stream for these seven folks and that they all get along and cooperate in that process pursuant to your rules.
Because they can't in the trust say you're the CEO of this.
Yeah, I mean, they could say one child is going to be the trustee and run the show. But then again, that could just cause a lot of, feelings and problems and negotiations that they're not prepared to do.
In my experience, when you have too many chefs in the kitchen, somebody's going to stir the pot. I see it all the time. And when they do, they create chaos within the family.
Always one.
Always one.
I don't know.
I see that with the other family, but I wanted to ask, the only reason I didn't want to have it sold is because it's in an appreciating area. And I know that a decade from now, it'll be worth 10 times more than what it currently is.
Let me interrupt that thought, because it's a thought that's presented to me with some regularity.
Unfortunately, we have a break.
Okay.
And we're going to, Jay, we're going to answer those questions when we come back from our break. Just stay on the line and give us a moment to recognize our sponsors. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes, and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Yes, sir. We're back. I'm Dean Weitzman, and this is Court Radio right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
And on YouTube Live. We love our YouTube audience as well. So keep it up, folks. We're growing the platform. We were on the phone with Jay before we went to break, and you were talking about...
I'm talking about a misnomer, and, you know, just without any due disrespect, this concept of a family house purely from a business point of view makes absolutely no sense. And grandparents have wonderful, you have wonderful intentions. You see the value of this property in appreciating dramatically. You're not going to be here to enjoy it. And for you to assume that these people, the offspring, the adult offspring, are going to do think like business people, I can tell you for a fact, I had a conversation not too long ago in the office where adult children were having the same conversation with me. So I said, okay, let's talk about this family house. The family house springs a leak in the roof, and the roofer needs $4,500 to replace the roof. By a show of hands in my conference room, who's going to write the check for $4,500? I look around. Nobody's raising their hand.
Amputees.
The homeowners
arms.
The homeowner's insurance is $1,100 a year. By a show of hands, who's going to Who's going to write that check for $1,100? Who's going to pay the PICO bill? Who's going to pay the GPW bill? Who's going to pay the water sewer bill? Who's going to pay the real estate taxes? And they look at each other. And the reality is that if you don't own it, you're not going to be motivated. Mm. And therefore, from a business point of view, you're much better off selling that property and distributing those proceeds than creating a trust with somebody stirring the pot, because there's not going to be any agreement. Somebody's going to want their piece of the pie a lot sooner than later.
Let me ask you a question, Jay. Is that property in South Carolina a part of a homeowners association or an HOA?
No, the beautiful thing about it, it's in a small historic town, and it's revitalizing. So since we built it, it has, you know, quadrupled in value.
How, and so how close are you to the beach?
300 feet.
Dean's ready to buy it.
No, I just might. I might rent it out for a couple weeks.
I saw that look
this summer.
I would love for all of you to come down and rent it.
It's got good golf down there.
Place. Yeah, that's true.
You can golf. That's right.
How many bedrooms is it, Jay?
It has 6 bedrooms.
Oh, we coming.
We're going to take this show on the road.
We coming to Myrtle Beach, Jay.
Oh, that sounds good. You can broadcast right from there.
All right, Jay. Thanks for calling.
I appreciate your advice. I just felt like, you know, could the trust pay those bills that you mentioned?
They can. Yes, they can. And in the difference between what Saul describes, which is a quote-unquote family house, and what you describe is more of a business. You're not living in that house. It's a rental property. Right. And, you know, so – but you still need to get these 7 people – working together. You know, maybe you have one person who's really running the entire show. The other 6 are just simply beneficiaries, you know. And if, but if 1 year, for some odd reason, like maybe a tornado or something, the cost of ownership exceeds the money coming in, then the other beneficiaries, I could foresee having to pay something. Again, it's complicated. Right. You're adding a lot of complication to these people's lives that they may not want. So I guess the question is, you should talk to them. Because they should be a part of this process, because I think in order for it to work, if it's going to work, they need to be 100% behind the idea.
Or one of them becomes the owner and they equitably work out compensation to the other siblings.
Yeah. I mean, again, these are conversations and consultations that, you know, if you sat down with Saul in the office, would occur. And you'd come up with a solution, I think, that would make sense for you. But it's not probably done over the radio or on YouTube. That's a consultation that you need to sit down and really dig in and understand the parties and who's involved and the sophistication of the various beneficiaries, et cetera. So I welcome you to give the office a call, Jay.
Thank you. I plan to. I appreciate your advice today.
Have a great Saturday.
And welcome. Thank you. Anytime.
All right.
By the beach.
I'm taking you up on that, girl. All
right.
I'm coming.
From his mouth to God's ears.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day, Jay.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Bye now.
What is this?
Yeah. You know what they just did just now?
What?
They just messed up your use of this show after this.
They slipped that right in there.
Yeah. Okay.
A little editing magic.
You can make that work?
Yeah. Only because it's almost at the hour.
You know, Manuel is good for it all the time.
Wait a second. He said it.
Not me.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. That's all right. Folks, we're just about out of time. What an interesting show we had today, Saul. Thank you so much for sharing with us and coming here.
My pleasure.
I think My Philly Lawyer offers so much to our clients in a down to earth family kind of way. Our office is there for Philadelphia and for the folks who take advantage of it. And so thank you guys. Thanks for participating in the show today. We are out of time. See you next week. Same time, same place.